Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Frim Scenarios. It's me, Emma. With me as always is Milk, a guy who's here.
It's me.
And joining us this week is James from the Pandemonium Institute. James, how Hello. Are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Great.
You know, it's a day.
We're glad to
it
have you on.
Indeed a day. Woohoo! I'm so excited to be here.
We're going to talk about a great character. I know a character you are going to have a lot of insight into, and I think a character that a lot of people really like and waited for a really long time. It was sort of a low-key kind of out there in the ether character, and that is the Hermit.
Hell yeah. I love the Hermit. The Hermit is so weird and good. And I'm glad it's been released. Just because we needed, you know, a character that made you go, how many outsiders is too many outsiders to put on a screen?
and that is the Hermit.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy, a friend of mine in Melbourne, who made a script. I don't think it has literally every outsider, but it's damn close. It's got like 12 or 13. It basically has inverse outsider. And he was like, as soon as the Hermit came out, it was a good day for him. So the
Hermit's ability is, of course, you have all outsider abilities, -0 or -1 outsiders. And its flavor text is in the lost and forgotten places of the earth, the soul's light beckons. So that's why, if anything has ever been a strong defense of the traditional four outsider script format, it's the Hermit. But also, maybe it goes on the 13 episode outsider scripts, too.
I've seen a lot of people experimenting with like different outsider counts and putting the Hermit on and trying to kind of figure out how it works. I think, you know, there's a couple of things. I put in our notes for this that there are no jinxes for the Hermit. Usually we talk about jinxes here. There are no jinxes for the Hermit, but maybe, James, if you could just sort of speak to the complications that can arise if you, for example, just throw this out there, you have a Hermit lunatic drunk. Could be complicated, yep. You know, to adjudicate.
I've certainly run that. It was fun.
I'm aware you have run that, Emma.
I love that you have run that. That's the true spirit of Clock Tower, really.
That's right.
I love this. This is like my favorite. I'm so excited to talk about this genuinely. Because I think the thing with jinxes, and I'm going to take a step back first and talk a little bit about like design philosophy, because I mean, you presumably people who listen to this already know the game quite well. I'm hoping that this is no one's like first ever introduction to Clock Tower. Maybe it is. Who knows?
Here's the Hermit. Yeah. This is the basic character. Play as the Hermit. Just have 13 outside the script. The drunk and the saint and the mutant. Don't worry about it.
Well, first welcome game. To your first game. This is all you need to know. But yeah, so like just getting back into design philosophy for a quick second. One of the things that Steve has talked about at length is that he really doesn't ever want to get into like three-way jinxes. You'll notice if you like have looked at the jinxes, every jinx is between two characters and only ever two characters. And that's super intentional, partly because the game's already complicated enough as it is. And so as a basis, like jinxes intentionally are designed to just solve problems that would make the game fundamentally unplayable. There are sort of different categories of jinxes, and this is not a podcast about jinxes and jinx updates, so I'm gonna stop before that is what it becomes.
We don't know when these releases. The jinx updates could have already been long past.
I know. Yeah. No, this is what's so silly is, oh yeah, that's so true. They probably, by the time this is out, though, because that's literally just like, they're all done and I just am waiting for people to finish translating them into Chinese. So it's fine. Everything's normal. The thing with jinxes is that there are kind of different types of jinxes, but ultimately the point of jinxes is just to be like, the game would be fundamentally unplayable if these didn't exist, so we're going to make them exist. But another thing that makes the game, in at least like to Steve's perspective, and I think I agree with him on this, another thing that makes the game unplayable to some degree is having so many rules that it is impossible to know all of the rules and therefore be able to engage in the game. And specifically as it pertains to new players, like Steve's design philosophy has always been, make sure that new players can go play the game and they aren't so overwhelmed by rules that the game becomes unplayable for them. And which is tough, right? Because you have all of these like really experienced players like us who are like, well, we want things to be more consistent. We want things to be super clear and have, and I mean, there was literally just a Reddit thread the other day where somebody was like, I rewrote all of the rules to make them more consistent. And I'm like, that's great. And it comes at the expense of new players being able to access the game and play the game. And so even though the character, like the Hermit, isn't there for new players, it is an experienced player character, it still needs to exist in a broader set of like game space and rules that is accessible to new players. And so where Jinxes fall into that and why the Hermit doesn't have any is because one, we for all of these reasons that I've just talked about, we don't do Jinxes for multiple characters, and the Hermit, in order to have Jinxes, would need Jinxes that inherently dealt with like every possible combination. And then that kind of was the other piece of it, was when Steve and I were looking at this, we did actually like do a lot of work to go, what would it look like if the Hermit did have Jinxes? What would it look like if we said, these are the combos that you can't do, or these are ways to do the combos that you can't do? And we basically, as soon as we started doing it, we were like, there are so many different possibilities and different ways that this could be, and in different groups, like different solutions are going to be better. I imagine that, Emma, what you did in your game with the drunk and the lunatic probably worked really well in your game, and there are probably other storytellers somewhere else who did a completely different thing that like made sense for their group. And so it just was like, if we do this, we're going to make people learn so many niche specific things that just like aren't going to be as flexible and adaptable to the groups that they're actually operating in. And which was, it was so based, honestly, to just be like, yeah, no jinxes, fuck it. Like, whatever. You do you. But like actually, that was an intentional design thing to be like, no, this is intentional and sensible, and it is the way that we will make this the most accessible. Because if you do have like jinx situations with the Hermit, the first question is going to be, well, what is this jinx? How do you run this as a storyteller? And the easiest thing to do is for the storyteller to just be like, this is how I do it, and then move on and not have to worry about whether or not it's like right. So,
And this is a really good design philosophy, in my opinion. I don't know if anyone else has ever tried to get into Magic: The Gathering, which has the exact opposite design philosophy, in their mid-30s for the first time. It's impossible. There are too many words to learn. They're not explained
trying.
Anywhere. They're not explained anywhere. It's just not worth your time. Like, you want games to be approachable for the way most people are going to engage with them. Even with the Hermit, is not going to be those of us who, you know, have racked up hundreds or thousands of games online. It's going to be people who go to their local event once a month or once a week, play one game with the Hermit every 3 years, and need to know what to do with it.
And those people aren't going to be on Reddit while they're playing the game looking for rules. They're not going to be on Discord asking about rules interactions. They don't have direct access to jams to talk about rules interactions. You know, they don't have Milk and Emma just necessarily hanging out there to be like, what do you think? The storytellers just have to make a choice and just run the game.
And believe me, the last thing I'm doing when I'm at some public game here in Phoenix or some private game where someone else is running it is want to say, oh, actually, I've read all the rules. I've spent too many hours of my life going through the unofficial Discord comments for things that Jams or Ed or way back in the day, Ted or John have said, and tell the storyteller how to run their game, because that's not fun for me, and it's not fun for the storyteller.
Emma and I are both very publicly fans of the consolidated rule sheet, right? The rule sheet that you read when you're running the game at a convention, the one-page rule sheet. And I think that's all you most of the time should need to play the game, and you could just ask the storyteller if you have a question. It's literally on the rules sheet.
Yeah, so
rule sheet is Bible. It's so
when the Hermit, when you as the storyteller decide you want your Hermit to have a butler's eligibility, you just have to make something up.
Yep. The butler's eligibility works just fine. Just tell them what it does.
Exactly. Problem solved.
So normally we talk about how to play the character at this point in the conversation. Obviously, we've brought you on for the easiest, most straightforward episode, Jams. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these are really simple questions to ask, obviously.
Why play one character when you play four at once?
Yeah. What do you do? What do you do when you pull this token?
Catch up, people.
That's right. Well, and in particular, this token, you might not even know you have it because there might be outsiders on the script that make you think you aren't it. So we have a whole bunch of complicated things. So let's start with a hermit that knows that they're the hermit and has some other abilities.
Yeah. I love this, and I do think I completely agree with you. This is going to be a little bit more vague than your standard. Like, this is how you play this, because like the and what I love about this also, so a little like almanac fun fact, when we write the almanac entries for characters, we so you have the character ability text, and then you have the flavor text, and then there's what we call the summary line, which is like a really short line that just says like the character blah blah blah, and just to give you like a not it's not going to say everything that that character does. It might not be like a perfect 100% like rules accurate, like this is exactly what this character is. But when we're designing characters, we start with like what we call the main idea, and that is sort of what the summary line captures. I don't know what words are. But yeah, the this is why Steve does the writing and I do the brainstorming. So the hermit one, the hermit says the summary line is just the hermit isn't really here. And I freaking love this because it works on multiple levels. And when Steve wrote this, I was just like, that's brilliant. Because the hermit, when you draw a hermit token, the ability that you have is actually you have the butler ability, the recluse ability, and the tinker ability. Or like you have these other, you don't actually have like the hermit in itself doesn't do anything. What the hermit does is it gives you other abilities. And so I just thought that was really clever as a line, and then also because it's the hermit, and it was also insanely, and I can't believe I have to talk about this, it was a nod to the fact that the hermit can remove itself, which is a thing we can talk about later and a thing that I still have feelings about, but
We'll get
to
to
put
that
it
one in the
lightly,
storytelling
we'll get to
section,
that.
probably.
Yep. Indeed. So yeah, to not get ahead of ourselves too much for playing the hermit, I think it's what's so fun is that it does push you to kind of consider not just like how do I play this one ability that I have, but like what does it mean for these abilities to interact with each other? So if you know that you have the saint ability, like normally you're like, okay, there are things I can do to be the saint, and maybe I want to lie about what I am to try and die at night. Maybe I want to just be forthcoming and honest and try and gain people's trust so they don't kill me. Like, there are so many different choices that you make in the context of like having the saint ability. If you then add the recluse ability on top of that, all of a sudden, that calculus of like, what do I want to do to be the saint in this game changes, because now it's not just like, how am I going to not get executed? It's how am I not going to get executed while other people are seeing me as evil? And like, I cannot justify this in the same way. I can't be like, no, see, the empath got a zero, so I'm good. I might be like, no, the empath got a one, so I'm good, and don't kill me because the game will end and we will lose. Like, it's so much different just to add in one character, and then you add in like a second one, or even more, depending on how many outsiders on this. And I just think it's such a fun. I don't know about you guys, but like when I sit down to play a game, when I get my token, I'm always like, the first thing I do is I go like, how do I want to be this character this game? Because I don't think there's like one thing that that's what I love about Clock Tower characters, right? Is that they're intentionally designed in a way, so it's not just like, oh, this is my ability, so this is the one way that I'm going to play it. It's like every game you can do something different if you want to. And I think Hermit just completely like, because you, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that generally. I think there are some hermit combinations where you might have to stray to towards, and I normally don't like doing this when I'm giving people strategy advice generally, is maybe this combination you have to play a certain way. If you're the mutant saint, probably have to never clave outsider. I'm
So true.
sorry. It's not like mutant where you have the choice to try to get confirmed. You don't have that choice. You're the mutant saint. If you're the recluse
So
saint,
true.
maybe you need to be a little more open than you might otherwise be as the saint or the recluse, because there's going to be evil pings generating on you, and if you're executed, you lose.
Yeah, and it's also fun when there's something like a puzzle master or something and a mutant, because then you're like, okay, I have this thing that I have to do, and it might be publicly obvious, and I want people to know that this exists, but also like if I do, there are consequences.
But
Yeah.
yeah.
And I think some of that, I think this, we don't talk a ton about script writing, but we do talk a little bit about looking for scripts that feature a character. And I do think some of that's going to go to like, okay, what's on the script? Like when you look at the script, and we can maybe get to that when we talk about storytelling a little bit as well. What's on this script and how are these outsiders going to work with one another if they're all stacked together? Right? Is this going to be a fun, challenging, interesting, whatever it is you're looking for in your outsider characters, for that player who draws the hermit token?
Yeah. And Mutant Puzzle Master, I think, is like a really fun combination if you lean into it. Because it's like, you might have critical game solving information, and you cannot directly share it. You have to find a way to share it. That's pretty fun. I once tried to homebrew a character like that in like one of my two efforts at homebrew, and I was just like, ah, this is too hard to make work. But Hermit Puzzle Master Mutant, I think, probably does it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I love like seeing the ways and just the different things that people come up with for how characters can interact. I remember because there's like a lot of outsiders where you're like, oh, it's like I can die. This is so fine. And then there's other outsiders where you're like, if I die, there's a terrible, horrible consequence. And I love putting together like a snitch and a plague doctor. Like,
yeah,
like, yeah. And the snitch I can. No. Like, yeah, it's just such a fun combination.
There's like the catastrophe combinations for outsiders that like if you have all three of these abilities, you like if you're under a lot of stress. Like I'm the sweetheart klutz plague doctor. This is fine. You know, and there's others that are sort of very chill. It's like I'm the tinker recluse snitch. Whatever, you know. And I think
and
finding like
mutant
finding...
drunk saint, and you're like, okay,
mutant drunk saint, and you're like, nobody claims.
No
to be
one
an
could
outsider.
Ever suggest their information might be wrong,
guys. My info doesn't make sense. I think it might be the game is over.
Game is over. So yeah,
it's so good.
There's a
it's
lot
so
of complexity here.
Yep.
And I think
no,
like,
actually, I love that because oh yeah, you go.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think Hermit in a lot of ways is a. I think there's a lot of characters that are like very mechanically enabling characters, right? That have some really like, you know, interesting mechanical puzzle solving things. And I'm not saying Hermit doesn't have that, but I think Hermit leans a little bit more funhaver like character that, you know, really some of the combinations that you can end up with are just, they're just a blast to have. Even to the extent of like being on a script where you can have multiple of the same outsider ability in play in an interesting way, you know? And so I think that those kind of combinations, combining weird effects with people who think they're townsfolk or think they're the demon in terms of the drunk and the lunatic, like those are really interesting and exciting things.
Yeah.
This is actually, this brings up a really good point to talk about because you mentioned like other players having one of the outsider abilities while the Hermit also has all of them. And that was actually quite a late change to the Hermit. I don't know if how public this is, but for a very long time.
I wasn't going
to
bring
Hermit,
it up because
like,
I didn't know how public
yeah.
it was.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's, no, everything is fair game. It's fine. But yeah, the I feel like once characters are released, it's like awesome to talk about like how they got to where they are. I think it's really interesting and cool. So yeah, I'm very happy to get into that. But yeah, the Hermit, for a long time, the setup text was not -0 or -1 outsider, but it was there are no other outsiders. So the Hermit, if there was a Hermit, just replaced every other outsider. There were no other outsiders, and that was that. The reason that we decided to change it was actually because of bluffability, which is like one of many things that we're looking at when we're designing characters, but specifically with bluffability, like an evil player, specifically the demon, needs to be able to claim that they are a character and not be just immediately like outed because mechanically that's not possible. And in like a base 1 or base 2 outsider game, if you were claiming Hermit and there were no other outsiders, but there were other outsiders because Hermit was a bluff, you just couldn't be the Hermit. And we played a hilarious game in London like last year, I think, where the there was an evil player bluffing Hermit, and there were like 3 other outsiders in this game. And there was an atheist on the script, but it was Dom from NRB, and he's just going, "I'm the Hermit. I'm the Hermit." And like everyone else was just like, no, literally, like I'm this outsider and I'm that. Like all of the other outsiders were in just agreement that like Dom was super evil. And he's just going, well, it's an atheist game. It's fine. Like it was just so blatantly like that doesn't, no, you're just evil, man. And so like we, from a bluffability standpoint, it was just unbluffable to have a character whose setup ability was like, nope, no one else is an outsider. And which changed the way that it worked. And so Steve was like, I think I want to resolve this by removing an outsider. And so we tried it with both just like straight up -1 outsider and then ultimately went with the like maybe there's not minus outsiders, but the idea is that like generally the Hermit should be the only outsider, but you have that flexibility for bluffing. And if there are like reasons why there should be more than one outsider, if you have a strong enough town and like you think it's a balanced enough game, it's totally fair to have multiple. But yeah,
I think like this is something where the content has skewed it because outsiders are fun. So like on the content side of Clock Tower, people rarely use the -1 outsider because outsiders are fun. option on the
So
Hermit.
true.
But like in quote unquote real games where they're not being produced to entertain people, I would almost always just knock off that extra outsider.
Yeah.
Not all the
Just
time,
have
because
the
that
Hermit.
creates the same blockability issue, but
Yeah,
I
it's
think
all about balance, right? And being like you're storytelling for your players to have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the intent.
But when playing the Hermit, the minus with the fact that normally you just remove an outsider is relatively important
Yeah, I think
because
so.
it does give you a part of the puzzle to solve.
Yes. Oh my God. I remember actually, this was back when it might have been like right before we released the Hermit. I was running a game with our Melbourne group, and I had a her my friend Ethan was the Hermit, and it was like mutant and some other shit. I don't remember what the other, but mutant is the important one because he just right away he's like, "I'm the Hermit. What are you gonna do?" And so I killed him. But I
Seems
waited
right.
until like the start of day two. So like we played all of day one. He had said he was the Hermit. Nothing happened. The actual Serenovus in this game was also we had a mutant as like another character in the game, and the Serenovus had made the mutant mad. So the mutant like knew that there was a Serenovus and knew that he was mad. And so then day two starts, and I immediately kill Ethan. They all go back to sleep, which was great because there was like a savant and some other shit that needed to like do day things. And so like Ethan dies. But what I didn't even think about when I was like in that moment of storytelling was that the actual mutant in the game at that point was just like, "Holy shit, I know so much because I'm the mutant, so I know that he's not the mutant. I'm Serenovus mad, so I know that he wasn't so, like he's super confirmed good as the Hermit specifically." Oh, that's what it was. He also had Plague Doctor. So the Hermit, Mutant, Plague Doctor, whatever the last thing was, he breaks madness, and then I used the Plague Doctor to make him Seri mad that he was the mutant. So
Brilliant.
he
Love
couldn't claim
it. I
Hermit.
love
He
it.
had to claim Mutant, and it was just so dumb and silly. But yeah, I do think like getting back to the actual like when you are the Hermit, there it's so valuable to think about like who else is claiming to be an outsider in this game, who else is trying to put out there that like that's part of what they are, because I know that my ability might have subtracted one, and why is there another one? Like what's going on with that? And it is such an interesting thing in a way that I think other good characters don't really get to do that, because the only like minus outsider characters I think are evil
Yeah,
basically. So
Godfather, Vigor,
yep.
Trunk, and Rook,
yeah.
if you want to think of it that way.
Yeah.
Kazali,
Yeah.
I guess, technically.
Typhoon, I guess.
Yeah,
Not really
like
what Kazali's trying to
Kazali or
do.
Lord of Typhon, dependent,
Yeah.
yeah.
Not really what they're trying to do, but I guess.
Sometimes an
Yeah.
accident happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I just kind of had one other thought, which I'm kind of interested in, and it's kind of based on a game that I played recently where I was the Hermit, and I was a hermit lunatic recluse
Tinker.
tinker, I think. Yeah, tinker. And the seamstress had a no on me and another player on the first day. And because Lunatic was on the script, I didn't know if I was the, when I figured out that I wasn't the demon, I didn't know if I was the lunatic or the hermit. And it left me in this really interesting position where the other person in the seamstress ping, I still didn't know if they were good or evil, because they could have been good and I was the lunatic, or they could have been good and I was the hermit with the recluse lunatic ability, or they could have been evil and I was just the lunatic, and I had no way to make that determination, mechanically. And it was just a lot of fun from that perspective to like be trying to solve out what was going on, And I think the hermit enables like some really fun and interesting situations like that. Are they hard solvable from the position of the hermit's chair? No. Should you do your best? Absolutely.
I love that, and I love things like that more generally, because I just think like it is there. I feel like I run into a lot of people who ask rules questions that are like so specific that it feels like what they're trying to get at is like this game should be solvable in all situations. And I think that that sort of it leaves out that like this is a social deduction game. And I know we like say this a lot, but genuinely, and I think that's the epitome of it, right? Because from your seat as the hermit, you're like, I am now forced to make a social read on this other player in the seamstress ping, and like how. how I go about the rest of the game, like, depends on that. Like, if I think that they seem really good and I want to believe that they're good with me, that means that I am the hermit and I registered as evil. But if I really think that they're evil, then I have to be just the lunatic and there might be a hermit elsewhere. And, like, I don't know. And it's just, it's so, I love that. I think that's so, it's how I play, to be honest. It's like, I will make social reads about what I think about other people in the game. And then I'll build my worlds based off of, like, who I think is good and evil. So if I really am so sure that Emma's good, like, I'm just not gonna build the worlds where Emma's bad, because those worlds don't exist to me, because she is good and she has to be. And then when she's evil, like, I just lose, but it's fine.
That's
So
okay. Yeah.
yeah, but yeah, I love that. I think Hermit really gives so much space for that, because it opens up so many more possibilities. And when you have characters, at least, or for me, when I am in a situation in the game where there are characters that just open up so many possibilities, I'm like, I don't have time for this. I don't have time to build every single different world where, like, these hermit abilities belong to me versus belong to someone else. Like, what I know is that, like, I have to start somewhere, and I find it easier to start with, like, I think this person's good or evil, than with, like, well, in this hermit world, then blah, 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 but in this hermit world, then this other thing. And yeah.
Yeah, like, and not to segue too off beat, but just, like, to the people who want this game to be hard solvable, I've been, for something else I'm doing, I've been doing some research into mafia game theory recently.
That's
Because
awesome.
Clocktower game theory doesn't really exist as an academic discipline yet, but mafia game theory does. And the thing about mafia is, from a game theory perspective, it should be a 50-50 game, but in real-life experimental conditions, vanilla mafia with no information, like 67-70% good favored. And that's because that's how powerful social reads are. One of the fun things about Clocktower is it uses information to trick you into ignoring your social reads. And that's one of the ways it generates a much more balanced game state than traditional mafia, where good just always wins.
I love that so much. And
And
I think
you
it's
see it all the
100%
time.
correct as well.
Yeah, you see it
Yeah.
all the
Oh, you
time,
see it
right?
all the time.
Towns
Yeah.
that get
Where, like,
hung
as
up
an
on
evil player.
information that's misinfo or that's a lie or that's a bluff. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, we're going to kill off of this information because it's information, and completely ignore the fact that the person's just been saying that they're evil for like 3 days.
I see this all the time with, like, it's for me, it's the difference between players who, like, really understand, like, how to, like, build a world in a game. It's most commonly it's evil players who don't stop to consider, like, that other people in the town, like, who they trust. And so you have an evil player who's, like, building a world, but the world means that, like, Milk, who everyone good is confident is good, has to be evil, and people just don't buy it. And they're like, well, that it just doesn't work. And it's like, you have to realize as an evil player, like, you need, like, sometimes you just need to kill the chef because everyone knows the chef is good. Doesn't matter that the chef's not getting more information. No one, this happens to me all the time. It's like, people think I'm evil when I'm good. I'll be like the dreamer or some shit, and I get to live for the whole game because everyone is just sure I'm evil. And then I will die as the frame because everyone thinks I'm evil. And it makes such a big difference to, like, really consider. Yeah.
Yeah,
Anyways,
he.
the
Yeah.
hermit.
Well, I could rant on this topic forever.
Oh, yeah.
We go off on
Imps who
tangents. It's
kill all
fine.
the information roles in Trouble Brewing, and then they're left with them and three outsiders, and everyone's like, yeah, we've known it's a Baron game the entire time. The person claiming Townsfolk is evil? Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
You had to kill those outsiders instead of the fortune teller. Sorry.
What's more suspicious in Final Three than a fortune teller who's still alive?
Oh my
Nothing.
God, yeah. It's such an interesting thing because I think for a long time I was just like, because I love the puzzle. That's like what I get out of Clutcher. I'm like, I want to solve a puzzle and hang out with my friends. I'm like, if I solve the puzzle and lose, I don't care. Like, I can lose, but I want to solve the puzzle. And I think, like, that was a really big point for me, was being able to recognize, like, okay, we have two kills left in the game and everyone thinks that I'm evil. I need to die now because if I live, I am now a liability. Like, and I don't want to be killed in Final Three. And it's such a fun little puzzle of, like, also playing the game of, is evil trying to frame me if I'm good? How do I get out of that? Because I don't, that I am now becoming a problem.
Drawing back to the hermit, I guess. We've been
Yeah.
on a slight tangent about
It's fine.
Clocktower theory. But drawing back to the hermit, I think, like, the relevant thing for this is, yes, focus on the fact that the intention of the character is another outsider is probably removed and use that to solve a puzzle. But don't get distracted by it. Do the normal things you need to do to solve the game as a good player who doesn't have direct information. Unless you're the puzzle master. In which case, also do that part.
Avoid exploding at a bad time for your team if you have a bunch of negative abilities. What's a bad time for your team? I don't know. Ever,
You
if
figure it out.
possible. Yeah, you figure it out.
I will say the never is definitely, I do feel like when I get like a plague doctor or a barber token or something, that is very much the challenge accepted that goes off in my brain of like, ooh, like new goal, live forever. Like, it's kind of fun. And I think Hermit is that just like cranked up another notch.
We actually talked about this with Barbara a little bit in a previous episode of the podcast, where we talked about how a lot of people are in a hurry to yeet themselves as the barber on day one, and try to get killed on day one. But it has the net downside, especially on Sects and Violets, of really disrupting a lot of day one useful, powerful information. Things like, clockmakers can get disrupted, dreamers can get, there's a lot of information that it disrupts. It's better to get killed at a time that's, advantageous for your team, or it's better to get a kill at a time that's advantageous for your team. Like maybe after you've killed a minion and the demon only has one place to swap and they have to think about if they want to swap there or if they want to swap other players. And all of that stuff from all of the other outsiders and all the strategy we ever talk about from any other outsider, it applies also to Hermit, is basically what I'm trying to get around to saying. So if you've ever listened to anything we've said or James has said or anyone else has said about outsiders, do that stuff too.
Hell yeah.
So I guess like the natural segue from this is, of course, so you get Hermit as a bluff as an evil player. What the hell do you do?
I
If you
think,
want to
yeah,
use it, maybe
Hermit,
you don't like the other two bluffs.
it's
Let's just.
genuinely, I think it's underrated how tricky of a bluff it is, because I think there's the bluffs that are like obviously hard bluffs, right? Like Cannibal and Undertaker and Dreamer. You're like, I have to, and Chambermaid. You're like, I have to generate information that seems true, unless I'm bluffing like Drunk or Vortox game or something. Like, I have to come up with information that people will believe and that makes sense in the context of what other people are saying. But with Hermit, it often lands, I think, more in that like Night Watchman territory of like, I might have to convince people that an effect has happened that I cannot do. And that can make things really tricky. And so I think with Hermit, it is very like, as a storyteller, I would be very mindful of like what other outsiders are on the script. Like if there's a, or like, and what minions, like if there's a spy on the script and Snitch is one of the outsiders, I'd be way more likely to give Hermit as a bluff, because I could be like, yeah, it's a lot easier for you to try and convince people that there's a snitch in play if the minion is a spy and they know the bluffs and could right away get to the other minion and give them roles to claim so that no one seems like they're a minion without a bluff. But also, like, is that going to happen? I don't know. Or like Plague Doctor, if the minions are like Poisoner and like Harpy or something, I'd be much more likely to be like, yeah, like we can mimic that that is happening. You can try and convince other people that someone is Harpy Man because they're really pushing on someone in a way that you can't really convince people that like there is a
The zero
psychopath
was just
ability that
made.
just isn't, yeah, isn't happening. Yeah, and so it is really, I think, a tricky one to try and bluff. But it can also be really fun if there's like if it's Hermit and like recluse and lunatic or something, like freaking great. Yeah, come out as like, oh my God, guys, this is why I've been registering as the demon all game. It's because I'm the Hermit. Duh. Like, and you can't kill me because I have the saint ability. Like, yeah.
And like you can bluff some of the harder roles if you like, if it's like a Golem Hermit script, it's possible to do a good Golem bluff.
Oh, for
It's just
sure.
much harder. I would not nominate on day one if you're planning to do a Hermit Golem bluff. I would wait till you nominate maybe towards when there's only one or two executions left, maybe.
Yes, and I think the timing in this is so important. I remember a game like this must have been like years ago. Ben decided to run a game of like it was like Fish Bucket before it was Whale Buffet, I think. It was just like a base three like Fish Bucket. And he gave the evil, I was evil, he gave the evil team like all S and B bluffs, but then the game was just a normal game of TB. And so our demon was bluffing Town Crier, and then everyone else was claiming TB roles. And I figured out that this was happening really quickly and was just like trying to be like, what TB roles aren't in play? Like, what's not in play? What's not in play? And I think it was like day three or something. I realized that there's not a virgin. So I was like, great, I'm bluffing virgin. But if I come out with it now, and I was the Scarlet Woman, so I caught the demon when they killed the real demon for not being a TB role. And I got nominated for the first time on like Final Five. And I was just like, oh, I'm I'm the virgin and the person who had nominated me was an outsider as well. And so it was just like, okay, if I had said this earlier, I would have been fucked, completely screwed. But because I waited, like, I actually had plausible deniability. And I think that's such a big thing as an outsider with, or as a hermit specifically, if you're trying to bluff these abilities that like have to have these conscious things in the world, like if you're bluffing plague doctor and maybe you're an imp or a fangu or something, you really need to like coordinate with your evil team to try and get them to claim something, or you have to argue like, oh, it's so late in the game that maybe the storyteller decided to just like poison someone that didn't matter, or like, oh, your information is weird, it's not because you're next to the Nardashi, it's because you're plague doctor poison. Like, you have to be able to recognize like, what are the possibilities, what are the other reasons, what are the ways that I can be like, no, really, this is happening, believe yeah. me.
I think outsiders as bluffs, I often rely on the minion turning the, or the demon even, turning the drawback of the outsider ability into a reason not to kill them, right? So, oh, you got a negative, you got an evil ping on me? Oh, well, I've the recluse, right? So that's, you know, that's okay that you have an evil ping on me. Or, oh, you want to kill me because I'm suspicious socially? Oh, well, I'm the plague doctor or the sweetheart. Don't kill me because it's going to be bad for town. I think it's very appealing as a bluff for Hermit, because you could pile up a whole bunch of this and stuff and go, hold on, everybody. This is really not good for us. We really don't want to do this, right? But I also think, like, you have to be aware of, like, the context of each of those abilities that's built into the Hermit. Because if you're the plague doctor recluse tinker and you're the demon and you're in final three, a lot of people are going to have questions about how the hermit who has the plague doctor recluse and tinker abilities is still hanging around, right? So you might want to find
like a bunch of knights of no deaths or something, where a real hermit tinker would probably have died in one of those.
Yeah, for sure.
Or the, like, storyteller really wants one of the minion abilities on the script, you know. And the tinker,
yeah,
plague doctor.
Yeah, if there's like a wizard and a psychopath and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, Emma.
No shot, my storyteller. Yeah, if I have a good player in that game, I'm like, no, this storyteller, they wanted that too badly. I refuse this.
Who is to say whether storytellers may sometimes choose to kill plague doctors when they don't necessarily have to, because they enjoy getting the minion ability?
I will say that. I will openly say that, because I think it's great and people should do it more.
Everyone should do it.
The number of games, I remember there was a game where I lived all game as the plague doctor and Ed was so disappointed because he was just like, no, I wanted an ability. And I'm like, that is valid. I am sorry for you. I have ruined your fun.
Like, I think when plague doctor came out, Patters ran it like in every game for like 3 weeks and he could not get it to die and give him an ability, and he was so angry that the plague doctor kept not dying and not giving him an ability.
I'm just like, oh ho, Mrs. Plague Doctor, you're dead. I have the Vizier ability now. This is fine.
Yep. I think one of my greatest accomplishments as a demon was in a game that we were running here in Sydney in playtest. I somehow killed Alana, the plague doctor, on night two. And it was because she was bluffing something like completely, I don't remember what she was bluffing. It wasn't plague doctor for sure. And I was just so surprised because I was bluffing Amni and Era was storytelling. And he was like, he just started doing this weird thing where he was putting the stuffed frog like around the circle and like pointing it at people and then eventually writing messages. And because it happened like starting from night two, I just like said it was my Amni ability. It was so dumb. But I was like, this is great because he took wizard. And I was like, yeah, I'm so happy for you. It's plague doctor is so good. And yeah, obviously when you're bluffing it, like, that doesn't work. But if you're bluffing something else, like, hey, it's
bluffing silly stuff in person is the best.
Oh, it's so fun. It's that's been one of the things, actually, if people have, I'm going to regret this instantly, but I do think like one of the things that we've been toying with in character design is like, what is space that we haven't gotten to yet? Like, what are things that we don't have a character that engages with this mechanic or that like touches this thing yet? And I think like in person, like physical stuff, there is a lot of space there. I know like Ellen in the UK has a hilarious character called the elephant, it's an outsider whose ability is like, you must be holding like a large unwieldy object during nominations, and if anyone is mad about the fact that you're holding a large unwieldy object, like, they might be executed or something, or you might be executed. I don't remember the exact thing, but it's like, point being that the mechanic is specifically that you have to like get a giant object and then just have it, and then everyone else has to be like, yeah, everything's normal here, this is fine. And I love, like, yeah, I think if there are like unexplored sort of spaces of Kotar, I want to hear about them, and I'm gonna regret saying that, but that's fine.
I mean, I think that in
RIP
person,
my
like
DMs.
in person effects, like things that are really, you know, that maybe are hard to do online or whatever, like in person focused effects, I think are a really great space. Wraith is just like Wraith is, and we're not talking about the Wraith, but Wraith is a good example of that, like where you, it's something that's really fun in person. You can just do different stuff.
Yes, I'm so grateful that we had the opportunity to reveal the Wraith in person as well as online, because I think that was just such a game changer in terms of showing people like this is what this can be. And a really interesting challenge. Yeah, again, this is not about the Wraith, but if another time we can talk about what it was like to actually make the Wraith work on. I'm still gobsmacked that that worked, that we have online Wraith and that people like it and that it works. Yeah. But yeah.
So
Any
yeah,
other
if you're
final
bluffing, I
thoughts
don't
on
know.
bluffing, Thurman? I think like yeah, I think it's mostly just pay attention to what effects your outside abilities should be generating, because
Yeah.
a sneaky amount of them have effects. Yes, there are so many. And this actually, the first time we really dug into this, weirdly, was when we were trying to come up with like, it was when Steve was sort of going, what would it look like if we didn't have any hate jinxes? And specifically, I had to look at Heretic and try and figure out if there were ways to make the Heretic coexist with evil Grimpeakers, basically. And one of the things that we had talked about was what would it look like if we had the Heretic register as a different outsider? And so I had to make a spreadsheet of every single outsider and then go through the outcomes of like, is how on a scale of like fine to like utterly broken and janky, like how bad is it if the Heretic registers as this outsider instead? And I think it was only like a third of them that were completely fine. There was
Yeah.
another maybe like third-ish that were like, you could make it work, but it would require some like real interesting bluffing on the Heretic's part. And then the last third was just like, yeah, nah, that simply cannot ever work. It won't happen. Evil will just know. And yeah, it's really interesting because you don't think of outsiders necessarily as things that are like that sort of like visibly impactful in the game, especially because they're supposed to harm the good team. And if you're like, no, but you have an effect that we could tell is happening, so you must be, you're a confirmed good player. But I think that's also why a lot of those effects trigger after the outsider is dead, because it's like, yeah, you know, a virgin who's confirmed good is still alive and they have killed someone else and that's their confirmed effect. In this case, like, yeah, now you're confirmed and you're dead and someone else is drunk. Like, uh-oh.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the outsiders are generally a little bit louder to the evil team, I think, than the good team, but there's still a fair number of them that are loud to both teams in some way. And even ones that are quiet, like through the puzzle master, and everyone's going, wait, no, my information seems correct, and my monk ability is working. You're buffing Hermit Puzzle Master. They might start to have some questions.
I think if you're supposed to generate drunkenness or poisoning, like make sure that there's something there that you can plausibly be drunking or poisoning, right? If you're the sweet, if you're the hermit's sweetheart, right? Make sure that that's there. Again, this is all sort of normal, like bluffing outsider stuff, but it's compounded in heretic or in hermit, not heretic. It's compounded in hermit because you have to think about all of them, right? You have to kind of do your checklist of like, is this gonna, am I gonna be able to bluff this part? Am I gonna be able to bluff this part? Am I gonna be able to bluff this part? You know, what
Yeah,
happens when I get to
exactly.
final three? You know.
Yeah, you're not just going, where is the person who's puzzle drunk? You're also going, where is the Plague Doctor effect? And why do the minions, like, do they seem like they have bluffs? And, like, am I registering as evil? And why have I not died yet? And yeah, you're doing this calculus that you would do normally once, like, three times over. And you have to figure out not just, yeah, it's a really layered bluff, which makes it that much harder. Because, like, even when you're bluffing Dreamer or something, you're like, I just have to come up with information one at a time each night. I can do
Yeah.
that. Like, it's like, yeah, it's
You
hard, but it's, yeah, it's all the
got
same pile of info.
with Dreamer, you have 1 to 3 minions you could fake confirm before you actually have to learn anything about someone if you play it right. But with
So true.
Hermit,
Or
it might be
Cannibal, you're
trickier.
like, oh no, we didn't execute anyone on the first day.
Yeah.
Great. My bluff is that I did nothing. Easy.
I think like some maybe just some warnings about Hermit bluffs. If you have a Hermit Heretic ability, maybe don't bluff that as the demon, because heretics want to be executed if they're alive in Final Three, and you don't. Any other ones like
So
that that
true.
are just like, maybe steer away from this jinx if it's part of the Hermit Sewage, this
Yeah,
bluff if it's part of the Hermit Sewage?
I mentioned Hermit, Hermit Tinker. I would also say any other Hermit, any other roles that should kill. Yes, you can bluff that you're a golem. Yes, you can bluff that you're a moonchild, but recognize that the mechanical worlds around that are going to have to be pretty stable, or your bluff is going to fall apart real, 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 real fast. Right? If you're the hermit with a moonchild ability and you pick and that person doesn't die and somebody else has pretty strong information that person is good. Whoa.
Give me your debt already, so it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's there's, you know.
Yeah.
There's stuff
Yeah,
like
it's the
that.
difference between the thing that you're claiming being something that actually adds to the puzzle and makes the good team question the things they believe versus the good team just going like, well, yeah, we thought you were evil and you are because your thing didn't
Exactly.
work. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's probably time to move into storytelling, the Hermit. And the first thing we like to do when we talk about storytelling character is, especially these, is you have to find a script. So, because there is no Hermit script, at least yet. Hopefully one day. So you have to go to Jeff's website or the unofficial script forums, wherever else you find your scripts, and find yourself a Hermit script. What are you looking for? What makes a good Hermit script?
I think the first thing that I look for with Hermit, and this almost feels like a cheat of an answer, but genuinely, if I see Hermit, I am immediately looking at what the other outsiders are on that script to be like, what is this combination? Is this for the first thing is this fun? Like, if I was a player in this game, would I have fun having these three abilities together? And if I wasn't the Hermit in this game, would I have fun thinking about how a player with these three abilities interacts with everything else, like with what I am and with what other people are on the script. Yeah, so I think that's for sure. I also it when as soon as I thought about like looking at the script, I remembered I was like, yeah, we did this whole thing where Steve was like, I want to redo the sort order, which is the order the characters are listed on the script. And I specifically was like, can we put Hermit first? And that's
It's
because when you're looking at the
bumpin'
script, just from
cheese
a like
pop.
simplicity and like ease of access perspective, if there's a Hermit, you want to know about it right away. You want to be like, is there a Hermit? And if you're the Hermit, you want to be like, okay, I'm this. What else have I got? And so yeah, that's why Hermit is first, because it's easier that way. But yeah, which is nice because then you go to Jeff Scripps' website and you say, okay, Hermit, what else?
What is this?
And yeah, so that's for sure the first thing that I'm looking at. I don't know if that strikes true for you guys as well or
I think so. I'm also going to look for roles that have obligate outsider manipulation, specifically things like Baron and Fangu that force you to add a character, not that give you the option to add or remove. You know, having additional outsiders, again, we talked a little bit about how Hermit wants to kind of be maybe the only outsider in play. Yes, it can remove an outsider from play. Yes, it can remove itself, which we can probably talk about in the near future. But, you know, if you're going to end up with a positive outsider account that includes the Hermit and other outsiders, there's going to potentially be some interactions there that could be problematic, especially with things like a sweetheart, where, you know, the Hermit sweetheart dies, and then the sweetheart also dies, and a lot of information is messed up. And also, maybe you're in a Baron game with a hermit and a hermit's or a hermit sweetheart and a sweetheart, and so there's not many townsfolk. And I think, you know, repetitive effects from something like a plague doctor as well, if you're going to have obligate outsider manipulation additions, having two plague doctor abilities go off, sometimes it's really fun, but sometimes it's sort of redundant and there's not that much for you to do with that second plague doctor ability. You know, especially by the point where they're both dead in the game, it might feel unbalancing. So I would just think about like looking for things like Baron, Fangu, things that, you know, do require you to add outsiders.
I think I actually want to push a little bit as well on the point that you've just made about like thinking about the duplicate, because that's such an interesting piece. And I remember, actually, this was quite early in like Hermit testing specifically. I wanted to know what happened if you put drunk with Hermit because no one had done it yet. So I was like,
Well, they've
we're
done
gonna
it
write a
now.
script. That, oh yeah, they've absolutely done it now. George's drunk klutz hermit script. If you, like for people who are looking for good hermit drunk, that
That's
script is
great.
so funny because no one know if you have a townsfolk token, you might be the klutz, and so you have to. Everyone has to klutz pick. It's so interesting and good. But this was back like it was. I don't know, like a year plus ago. I have to find it, but I did actually before this, I went to go find that script. The script is called Come Hither, Kazali, in spite of the fact that it does not have a Kazali on it. Don't remember why, but yeah, it was the first time that we had really played with like Hermit and Drunk, and it was really good. It was super simple. It was like recluse tinker something. Oh yeah, it was recluse tinker drunk. So just like really simple. It was like you think you're a townsfolk, you might register as evil, and you might die at any time. Just really, really simple, sort of like the most basic like little hermit package with a drunk. But one of the really interesting things that came up was that the possibility of having both a drunk and a hermit drunk made things just so impossibly complicated for the good team to solve. And players who really liked to solve that puzzle were just like really frustrated, like more so than I would have guessed that they would be, by the idea that there could be these two drunks in the game. And like normally you're like, I can deal with the drunk because it's only one drunk. But when you make it there might be two drunks, all of a sudden it really changed things in a way that I think was quite tough. And so it was that coming back to like a storytelling point, yeah, thinking about like if I have a hermit and one of these other outsiders, how much worse is that? And what does that do? And how does that impact the game? That was something that I wasn't expecting to be as crazy as it was. And I do think there are certainly times where you could have a hermit who is drunk and also, or a hermit who thinks they are the townsfolk because they have the drunk ability and a drunk elsewhere. But yeah, definitely something that should be used, I think, more sparingly than like I was anticipating.
Yeah, probably don't put the poisoner in that bag too, right? Like when
Yeah.
you're building that bag, maybe just don't add the poisoner.
Oh,
That'd
did
be
you
good.
not want? Sorry, I thought that the other abilities were the puzzle master and the sweetheart, and
Yeah,
also there's a sailor. Yeah, the townsfolk are a sailor and an innkeeper.
that seems right.
And the
The
demon is
demon
a
is
leech,
a Nodashi or
No
something? I don't know.
Dashi
Yeah.
leech. Yeah, that seems right.
Like, I think
Yeah.
with Hermit especially, you want to think about what your group is going to enjoy. Maybe a lot more than some other character. Not that you should never not be thinking what your group is going to enjoy when thinking a script. But someone in your group is going to have this outsider combination if you're planning to run the Hermit. So, like, think of, like, what is going to be fun for the median player in your group. What is going to be interesting for them and what is not going to be fun? Maybe you'll have a group that really likes it when they you have to come up with a janky house rule to make two outsiders that are like strictly incompatible work together, like Butler and Zealot. Like, okay, I have a house rule for Butler and Zealot, my group's gonna like that. They'll have fun with it. Other groups will be like, this is so weird and confusing, I don't want to listen to an extra rules explanation. Maybe for that group, avoid your Butler Zealot combo.
Yeah, even if you have a group where like they don't really like, I've had a lot of players who sort of misunderstand the butler at first, and they're like, oh yeah, when that person votes, I must vote, not like, which is how people will run
That's
Butler
how
Zealot. But
Butler
I feel like
Zealot works.
if that's how your players are thinking about the butler, maybe don't do Butler Zealot because they're
Yeah.
just gonna re it's gonna reinforce this is how the butler works and it's not. And yeah, but yeah, I think I completely couldn't agree with you more that it's that you really, because it just it like it multiplies the number of interactions and the number of ways that characters interact, because you have one player who is a one in three or a one in four instead of just being one character. And yeah, it makes really being conscious of like not just is this going to be fun because of the way this one character interacts, but is this going to be fun because of the way this package of three characters interacts with everything else.
And I want to emphasize what Emma said as well, which is, if you're looking at your circle and you're like, well, most of the circle is going to enjoy this combination, but there's a couple of people who this is going to be a really bad time for them. Err on the side of caution for those people because you're guaranteed that one of them will draw the hermit. I mean, it is just going to happen. The person who you're like, it's the only person who wouldn't enjoy this, they're going to pull it. And it's just how it goes sometimes. So just think about making sure that. Yeah, think about making sure that everybody will enjoy the experience.
Yeah.
So you've selected a script. Is this the script we're selecting? I don't know if
This
we
is
talked about this.
we didn't talk about it in advance. This is still a lantern for the Lost and Lonely, which was up from previously that I was running, but it has Hermit on it, so I just left it. Oh, we lost Gems. I'm sure Gems will be back. Just figure it out. We can switch the script. This is fine. It's magic. I can just push a button and change it.
Yeah, I just don't know if this is the script we're selecting.
Might be. It's the one that's here.
The one here, it has Hermit.
It's the one that's been up for the entire time. So if we want to do a different one, we can do a different one. We're just
Sure, it's
vamping
fine.
now, right? Like this is just us
Yeah.
vamping. Oh, okay, good. I'll probably
I mean, we won't cut this part, but it'll be funny. We'll talk about how we're going to cut it, and then we won't. That's our standard operating procedure.
Everybody seems to like it when we, you know, let them see the behind-the-scenes stuff. This may be, like, slightly less interesting behind-the-scenes stuff, but, you know, it's fine. Ah, there's James. Slight disconnect. James is very far away from us, so the internet had to catch up.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's just classic Aussie internet. We're good. Okay. But what I did get was, so we're selecting a script,
and this is the script that I happen to have up for other reasons, but it does have a Hermit on it, so we can do this one if you want.
This is
A Lantern for the Lost and Lonely by Amber and Axios, and it's a decent enough exemplar script. It's got a Hermit on it.
You're storytelling the Hermit, you've fixed your script, and let's just assume the Hermit's going to be in play, because that's what we're talking about.
That sounds fine.
How do you bad build for a Hermit? What are you looking for to put with your Hermit? This Hermit is a bit of a weird situation, because it's a lunatic speaker, reckless plague doctor, so you're not actually putting the Hermit in the bag most of the time, but you might be.
Yeah. I think, like, when I'm putting a Hermit in the bag, the first thing I'm looking at is, like, what are all of these abilities? And I don't know if I necessarily start with, like, should I also have another outsider? But it's certainly something I'm considering over the course. I think it's more of an ongoing consideration. And I do think that, like, at least when I'm building a bag, there are sort of things where I'm like, oh, I have this, so I want this to go with it. And then there are things where I'm like, I'm kind of thinking about this in the back of my head the whole time I'm building the bag, and I might kind of switch things after I've initially picked just to accommodate for that. And I think Hermit tends to be a little bit more on that latter side of like, I put the Hermit in the bag. As I'm putting other things in the bag, I'm going to be continuously sort of thinking about like how those play with the Hermit, and I might put something in initially and then go, no, actually, I want to change this afterwards. So like looking at this script specifically, the first thing I see, the first thing that I saw, I was like, okay, this Hermit has the lunatic ability, so they're going to think they're a demon. And when I have a lunatic, I do really enjoy, like profoundly enjoy having a poppy grower if I can, because poppy grower is one of those things that really lets the lunatic think that they are the lunatic or think that they are the demon, not the lunatic. And with poppy grower, like, part of, I think, what makes that really genuine for a good player who thinks they're the demon is that you have another good player who genuinely, like, believes that they are the poppy grower and are trying to convince people that that is the case. But at the same time, like, poppy grower can be rough for evil, especially looking at this script. You do have a Scarlet Woman, but you also have a witch who might accidentally witch their demon in a poppy grower game, which could be an issue if there's no Scarlet Woman. You have a harpy who might make evil players mad or make good players mad about, like, their demon or about other evil players. So I don't know if I would want that poppy grower, but I think it's a good thing to go, like, okay, that's here. That's something that will play nicely with that lunatic ability that the Hermit has. I think seeing, like, Seamstress here is fantastic because you have a player who won't be able to, like, say that they had the recluse ability, which really plays, I think, in a very interesting way with that Seamstress. Similarly, Oracle. I'm mostly looking and going, like, what are all of the things that are going to interact with the recluse ability with it? A good player who thinks that they are the evil demon in a really interesting and fun way. And I quite like the idea of, like, that Town Crier as well. Yeah, oh, Gambler. Just murder the Gambler.
Yeah, I quite like Gambler.
There's nothing you can safely give Hermit recluse lunatic as. Nothing. You are always dying.
And I also think Gambler is interesting too because, right, you can use the Hermit in a different way because of their tinker ability to make it seem like the Gambler misgambled when maybe they're killed by the demon. Right. So I think there's some interesting stuff you can do with it.
Imagine that you give that Hermit Gambler as a bluff, and then they tell you that they're gonna, like, gamble. So you're like, yeah, I'm bluffing that I'm gonna gamble this person, and it's like, I don't know, the bounty hunter or something, and you just freaking, like, give the bounty hunter the just kill them, just kill the demon, because they think they have a Scarlet Woman, and they're like, yeah, I'm bluffing Gambler, and then they actually die and
to a mistaken gamble,
and then they're trying to explain, like, no, I thought that I was evil, I thought I was the demon, and I was bluffing Gambler, and I died because I gambled, but no, like, I didn't really gamble, but I died because it was Tinker, and nope, it's just like, what do you do? It's so good and silly. Probably, so I like that a lot.
Probably in this bag we are going to throw in a Scarlet Woman, to help out the demon a little bit. Something else that's useful. One of the things I like about Lunatic as a role is that part of the drawback is giving the evil team information, right? And here, you know, on BMR, obviously the Godfather can learn, you know, that there's Lunatic in play. But here, it's a piece of information that the demon can gain about a specific player in a poppy grower game. So now you know that person is not the poppy grower. You know that person is not your minion. You know exactly who that is. You know they're not a priority to kill. You know they're going to be figuring out weird stuff. And so it's like a good anchor piece of information for a demon who's not going to know their team.
Yeah, I love that. I literally, I ran Stowed Away like 2 nights ago at Sydney Games, and that was exactly what I was thinking about as I was building the bag. I was like, I want this to be a poppy grower game. The demon's going to be a Vig, so I need to make sure that I have enough outsiders so that I can still have a lunatic to give them someone. And then, of course, someone dropped out of the game like right after we had wrapped. Like, they just didn't. They went over. They were like, oh, there's too many players, so I'm just going to look at what characters you're putting in the setup. And then it turned out they had been counted in the numbers. So it was,
oh, no.
Anyways.
Disaster. Creepy.
The worst.
It was fun.
The worst.
It
the
actually
worst
worked out. It did work out because I was like, oh, I can just take out the person who was going to be lunatic and I'll just make her a traveler instead. So instead of, I was like, I had to wake her up on the first night and be like, you're not actually the imp. You're the evil apprentice. You have the Serenobis ability. And she was like, what? Like, what's
Don't worry
happening?
About it.
It was fine. I was like, don't worry about it. It's fine. So we've made it work. Getting back to this. I think, Scarlet Woman on this for sure, if we're putting that hermit in the bag. Because also, if you think you're the demon and you die and there's not a Scarlet Woman on the script or in the bag, you're like, oh, I was the lunatic. Everything is fine.
You don't
if
want
you
that.
Die and you think that you had a Scarlet Woman, you are now a dead good player who is playing to protect the shit out of somebody who isn't on your team. Like, that's amazing.
Seems like a so, good
yeah,
drawback
very,
for an outsider to create. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think Banshee on this is really interesting, partly because I, at least the way I understand this ruling, I think Banshee says if the demon kills you, which intention-wise is like if the player who is the demon points at you and kills you. But what I kind of like about this is that if there is some way for, like, let's say the hermit points at the banshee and then the real demon follows, you're like, okay, oh my god, I have killed the banshee, and like I register as the demon, like what's happening? But if you pointed at the banshee, or if you pointed at somebody else and then the banshee died, I think it would create a very interesting thing of like, wait a second, how did this happens.
It's like an alarm bell, right, that goes
What's
off.
Going
like,
on here?
Something's yeah. wrong.
Yeah.
I also
yeah.
really like just Banshee with Yaga Babylon Theory, just because of the small possibility that Banshee might have to trigger during the day.
Oh, Day Banshee is delightful. I was thinking about that. Somebody recently, it might have been you actually, Emma, was like, if the witch is holding the little monster and they have witched the Banshee and the Banshee nominates, does the Banshee go off? And it's just like, what a
I
joy.
Hope so.
What a special well, moment. I
we're
don't
all waiting
why
to
not.
Find out.
But one day it will happen. It'll
one
be so
day.
Cool.
One day it'll happen. It'll be the most amazing.
Let's throw that Yagababble in there, right? Because we can decide on demon later, because the Yagababble's gonna be the hermit lunatic anyway. So
I love it. Yep. What else? I think like fortune teller on this is quite funny as well, because they will get yeses on the lunatic.
The hermit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, yeah, the hermit lunatic recluse.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think I would probably, I will say, bounty hunter on this is actually quite interesting, because I think depending on your setup, if you have a setup in which the lunatic and or hermit genuinely believe that they are evil and are playing for the evil team, I think if you also have on top of that an evil townsfolk who knows that they are evil and is trying to figure out how to play for the evil team, all of a sudden, when you're thinking about voting distribution in a 12-player game, if you have two players from the get-go who think that they are evil and are playing for evil, instead of like a 9v3 sort of situation with an unknowing majority, you have a 5v7 on votes right from the start. And when it only takes 6 votes on the first day and 5 of those votes are people who think that they are evil and playing for evil, I think that can be really rough for good, because literally if you kill a good player on the first day and then a good player dies that night, the next day voting is effectively 5v5.
Thing has
right
been snowballed.
And that's day two on day two. And so I think that's one of those things where you do want to be really careful. Like if you're giving your hermit some tools to be able to figure out, like, wait a second, I'm not evil and I need to be playing for good and figure that out early, then you could have a bounty hunter in play. But I think it's just, it can be very, it can quickly get out of hand and become difficult for the storyteller to balance, is more where I'm going with that.
Yeah. Extra evils or people who think they're extra evils can be real tricky to balance.
Yeah. This bag probably needs is a starts knowing to give the town something to work from. So I think probably a Shigenja is pretty good here.
We'll put in the Shigenja. Let's put in a poisoner first, hot second. And then let's make the decision, the big hermit decision, which is, are we actually going to stick with this minus one? Or are we going to take away a townsfolk and put in as a hot outsider?
Are we just going to
remove the hermit? Because we can do that too.
Oh my God. I literally had to go back. I just typed hermit into my notes to be like, where is the notes where I wrote down all of the logic that Steve and I talked about for why that exists? And we can save that. But to answer the question, I think in this setup, at least for right now, I'm leaning towards using the minus one outsider on the other outsider to put in an extra townsfolk. Assuming that if we have a poppy grower, I would put in the extra outsider. But if we don't have a poppy grower, then I would do the minus one and have just hermit.
I think you said it.
Because the other fun
backwards
thing.
Backwards of what you intended. But yeah, I agree with you.
Oh, probably. Yeah. Yeah.
With the poppy grower, you probably don't want the extra outsider. The right.
If I have a poppy grower, I want just a.
Just the hermit.
If I have a poppy grower, it's going to be worse for evil, so I want just the hermit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We know how words work. If we don't have a poppy grower, I think I'm okay to have two outsiders in this game, sort of as you would.
The poppy grower is sort of your extra townsfolk that's replacing the outsider.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. I'm looking at this and I think, like, with the hermit, one of the things that can be really interesting, and especially because this hermit has the lunatic ability, so they, unless we give them outsider bluffs, which I would not be inclined to do in this situation, I would absolutely be giving the evil team an outsider bluff in this game and letting, like, I would probably be giving the demon recluse, to be honest, or plague doctor, and going, you claim outsider, you're going to be the only outsider claim in this game. And you're going to realize that when you learn that you have a lunatic, you're going to be like, wait a second, if I was the demon and I got an outsider bluff on this script, and then I was told, like, Nilka, you're lunatic, I would be like, oh, that's a hermit minus one. And I can claim outsider and no one else is going to be claiming outsider. And the only negative outsider mod on this script is hermit. So in a base two game, I'm going to look so good just by being the only outsider claim. So that, I think, is a really interesting place to start for evil. And even that, like, having that degree of, like, bluffing space is, I think, enough to merit just having one outsider. Because that's the balance of it, right? Is like, yeah, you take away the outsider, but you also give evil the potential to look super, super confirmed by being the only outsider claim in a base two outsider game.
Yeah, it's the vigor mortis advantage. It's the vigor mortis advantage, but on an outsider, right?
Something I think about a lot is just, like, outsiders by their nature end up with a weird amount of social trust. There's lots of reasons for this, because a lot of people ignore the recommendation of the rulebook to always give two townsfolk and one outsider to bluff the evil team, so the evil team doesn't bluff outsider enough. Some of them are, like, confirmable. Some storytellers see a recluse on Frommel Varun and be like, all right, we have my investigator ping, my empath 2, and my fortune teller. Yes, right there. And this is, like, great. The recluse is super confirmed, and so are all these townsfolk. But that does mean outsider bluffs can be incredibly sneaky powerful for evil, especially when you have something like a hermit who doesn't know they're the hermit, and the outsider who's going to be open is going to be really open.
Yeah, I think outsider bluffs are criminally underrated. So I absolutely love that. And I think hermit with a lunatic or hermit with a drunk, like, any reason why the outsider count might be obfuscated and the person who is really an outsider doesn't have the tools to talk about it, even like hermit mutant. It's just so powerful because you could literally go all game as the demon just claiming to be an outsider and people aren't going to bat an eye because they're going to go, oh, I had this game a couple weeks ago, actually. Ed gave me a recluse bluff and I was just like, without skipping a beat, it was like, that's mine. I am taking that. I am bluffing recluse. Of course I'm bluffing recluse. And I was in Ben's investigator ping with my actual wizard. And Ben was just like, well, it's not jams. It's like, great. Done. Just gonna let that fly. Yeah. And Hermit, it makes outsiders so much more bluffable by being what it is. Because you can claim any of the other outsiders, and especially on this script. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Emma, you want to send the characters out and we'll look at the game as a whole?
Yeah. I think we'll just turn this OHO back into the Hermit now.
There you go.
I like this a lot as well, as a side note, the fact that our OHO is the lunatic, because the OHO is going to pick characters and then the Yagababble isn't going to pick their own kills. So the Yagababble is going to learn, basically, your demon picked, C12, and they're going to be like, oh, I bet C12 is the puppet grower. Not that I can do anything about it, but maybe now my poisoner can poison them, or maybe I can say to the storyteller, hey, I would, I'm trying to say my phrase a couple times today. These are the kills I'd like you to prioritize. And just for a second, stepping back to like player agency, this is something that I would love to see more with players, of like that communication with your storyteller being like, hey, this is what I'm trying to do and this is what I want to do. I was thinking about this actually at the Sydney Games the other night, because I was running a game and the demon said he was bluffing courtier. And I was like, because I asked him in the night, I woke him up, was like, what are you bluffing? He's like, courtier. And I was like, cool, okay. I really want to give the savant information that like uses the evil player's bluffs in the information, but he didn't tell me like when he was planning to use his ability or like what he was going to like say he had drunk. So I didn't learn that until he came out publicly like many days later. And so I ended up giving the savant instead just a statement that was like, the librarian saw two good players or the exorcist picked a good player. But I was like, I wanted to be able to like support you more. And how do you do that? You tell the storyteller. And so getting back to this, looking at this, I'm like, if I'm the Yag, I'm absolutely going to the storyteller and saying, hey, I think that seat 10 is the hermit instead of the lunatic. And so I want you to try and get like, please, like, show them as evil at any chance. Or I think that they probably picked Poppy Girl. They probably picked Bounty Hunter. And so I think that this person's the Bounty Hunter. And please use that when you're like doing the kills for me. Like, there's just so much space there for that to happen.
There's also a traditional recluse problem in this particular game, because we have a fortune teller and a town crier. Fortune tellers detect potential demon candidates and town criers detect potential minion candidates, right? So that's something to be aware of as you're scrolling through the list of a million hermit abilities is, hey, I still got to do the basic recluse thing of not necessarily showing this person as both a minion and a demon.
And with town crier, absolutely, you can be a little more judicious if you want to, like, say, frame the Shigenja as a minion and one day the poisoner nominates with the Shigenja and the next day the hermit does.
Right.
You can use the hermit there.
Oh, yeah.
I would recommend not being, like, trigger-happy with a hermit recluse and just registering them zeal to everything, because that gets weird.
Yeah, and it makes them kind of confirmably good. Like a recluse, like any other recluse.
I do think there is also the timing aspect, where if you wanted to make them look like a Scarlet Woman, you could have them register to, like, the town crier early, for example, as a minion, and then later stop registering them and be like, now they register as a demon. Which would be really sneaky, because then they're going, oh, like the demons die, like the Scarlet Woman, because they weren't a demon, now they are the demon and they're definitely evil. The whole time they're just the poor hermit.
But yeah, also just strongly agree with, please communicate with your storyteller when you're evil.
Oh yeah,
we did a mailbag recently where we answered the same question in the same way, but please as a storyteller, I am trying to balance the game towards a way which means I want to use evil abilities, which includes the downside of good abilities, to help you. If you try to hide what you're trying to do from me, I cannot do that. And that makes me sad. And then you lose, and that makes me sad too.
As a storyteller, I can liberally be more helpful to the evil team the earlier in the game it is, because your advantage isn't as strong, because the numbers advantage is still against you. The earlier in the game I know what you're kind of doing, the easier it is for me to help you. If I know, if there's three good and three evil alive, and you're now telling me what you're bluffing and what I can do to help you, I'm a lot less likely to be able to do it, because I now have to look at the overall balance of the game, not just what's going on with your team.
So true.
So let the storyteller know what you're doing. Just have a little, hey, by the way, I'm doing this thing. It's easy.
The next thing I wanted to do was just ask, like, a few, like, maybe weird situational things about what you might do with the Hermit ability in this setup. So maybe it's, like, day three and something like, this has happened and then the Hermit gets executed.
how are we going to use the plague doctor ability this hermit gives us in a situation like this?
Oh,
all the
my.
Evils are still alive. The poppy grower is dead.
So I'm looking at this, and my first thought is, like, evil's doing pretty freaking well. Yeah. However, the fortune teller is still alive. And let's just say for the sake of this that the poisoner figured out who the town crier was really early and was like, yep, happy. I'm just going to poison. So the town crier has just been poison locked just for the sake of like trying to figure out. So I'm looking at this going, OK, we have a Yagababble who, and maybe the Yagababble has said to me, like, I think it really depends. Right. The first thing I'm going is like, has the Yagababble said to me, like, what they think seat seven is? Does the Yag think that seat seven is the banshee, or does the Yag think that seat seven is like the bounty hunter or the like the, I don't know, the innkeeper or something? Because that would also hugely impact, because I'm assuming the Yagababble, let's say the Yagababble has said their phrase once. So we're going to kill someone tonight. These are all things that I'm thinking about when I'm looking at the hermit and going, like, what plague doctor ability are we taking? There's a lot of really fun ones, to be honest. And looking at this, like, Scarlet Woman, I think is not useful any way. So I'm probably writing
sort of
that
stealing
off.
Somebody else's
still,
function.
Yeah,
right?
It's
still
not
have
a super bad idea when there's three evils alive in a situation like this, and one of them is a Scarlet Woman, because you'd be killing the other one, Scarlet Woman, and then if a demon gets executed, bad things.
Now there's
happen.
Two demons.
Ah, yeah. You basically would have to say, I have two Scarlet Women. They're both going to fire when the Yag is executed. Or you have to say, I'm going to house rule this so that like the real Scarlet Woman gets it first. But then if they die, then the poisoner Scarlet Woman becomes the demon. And yeah, it's just,
you probably
it's
don't
just icky.
So, like, you probably don't want to clarify that for the town in the middle of the game also.
Yeah.
And by the way, guys, I mean, I'm just running a Scarlet Woman special role with Plague Doctor.
For no reason.
I
was just thinking of this weird situation where what if I have a Plague Doctor Scarlet Woman ability with a real Scarlet Woman still alive?
Oh my god.
Here's
my rolling
down.
Carry on.
I had to do this in a... in a game where like the players were like quite new to the Boom Dandy, and so they didn't know, and so I had to like in like basically say like, this is what happens if the Boom, because they all were like, well, we're gonna just point at the Boom Dandy if he dies because we point at someone evil, and I had to be like, no, that's not how it works. You point at the person you want to die, like that's who you point at. But yeah, the I think in terms of the minions, let's go back there. Yeah, I'm looking at this minion list going, okay, I don't really want Scarlet Woman. They already have a living poisoner who's doing a good, like a balanced amount of damage, to be completely honest. So I don't think it's necessary. Like, poisoning a second player is just going to be, I think, too much at this point. And the Plague Doctor should be a lot. But if the Hermit, like, thinks that they are evil and thinks that they have a Scarlet Woman and is going to continue playing for evil, then I think having another poisoner, like...
Agreed. It's a little too much.
Poisoning the Oracle. The Oracle doesn't need to be poisoned. There's a dead recluse now. The Seamstress presumably, let's say, has already used their ability because it's like night two or three or whatever. So like they don't need to be poisoned. The only things really that I can poison are the Fortune Teller or the Banshee. If I poison the Banshee, they're just going to be like, well, probably that was Plague Doctor poison and that sucks. Whatever. And the Fortune Teller, like... I think is kind of Good's only hope at this point, and Good also doesn't have a voting majority anymore. So I'm happy to not poison that fortune teller, especially given that the evil team has plausible deniability. They have a Scarlet Woman still, so the fortune teller info isn't going to be as useful. Like, I don't think poisoner is going to help the evil team as much as it's going to like suck for the good team at the end. I feel like if I was a good player at the end and the storyteller was like, yeah, they had three evils alive and a living poisoner and the hermit thought that they were evil and I decided to also poison the one remaining source of decent information, I would be like, yeah, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
Like, what's like, that?
Yeah.
You never want to be in a position where the storyteller where like the Banshee's been doing really good and then you're like, I guess I have nowhere else with this poison. So tonight when I know the demon's going to kill them, I'm going to poison them. That just sucks.
Yeah.
I think,
and like early on as a storyteller, I think I made mistakes like that where I would go, well, I have to do something with this. And it's like, no, actually, you don't.
You
like if the sweetheart dies and there's no one worth drunking, you can just chuck it on a dead player. And like, that's OK. Like, it doesn't need to do something useful. Like if the sweetheart lasted that long such that their dying didn't mean that there was anybody worth drunking, then like good on the sweetheart. And that's fine. Yeah.
I think the two things that I look at this and I think are, one is I could take the Harpy ability and make the town crier mad at someone that they've seen as a minion in their information, right? That's one possibility. And the other possibility is to take the witch ability put the witch's effect on a good player and then commit myself to not putting that effect on another good player after, if that player dies to the witch ability. Like, one hit of a witch, there's eight players alive, so the calculus for nominations and voting is kind of, it's kind of okay for a townsfolk to, you know, it's about half an execution for a townsfolk to die here to a witch ability. So the acceleration is not super bad. I think that's probably where I would be leaning for something that's balanced and feels like an outsidery effect, especially when the hermit, the hermit, I think one of the balance questions about it is the hermit is one outsider. In this case, it's two outsiders, right? Like, we're using it as like our second outsider, but it has a lot of different outsider abilities. And if the lunatic's effect has been super impactful and damaging to the good team, I don't necessarily need the plague doctor's effect to also be super useful and damaging to the good team, right? I want this to be a reasonable amount of outsider damage. If every effect on the hermit, like if the hermit has disrupted the fortune teller, disrupted the town crier, disrupted the seamstress, disrupted the oracle, it's also voted with the evil team because it thinks it's evil. It also died to its tinker ability, and it gave the evil team an extra minion effect. That's more than what an outsider does. Like, it's just too much. It's too much damage.
Yeah, and I think the other factor I would think about with the witch and the harpy is whether I want the hermit to remain confused about hooked team down, or if I think good needs them to figure it out. Because the harpy is going to be a lot more solvable as backtraceable to, okay, the hermit died this day, and then the harpy ability showed up.
Yep, agreed.
Whereas the witch ability could easily have just missed a few days.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or if you think that hermit isn't figuring it out and you don't want them to, it feels like locking, like picking somebody that you think is going to live at least as long as like till final day type situation and just locking the harpy on them. Like I'm looking at this and I think if, let's say the seamstress has a no on like the oracle and the poisoner, how fun to make the seamstress mad that the oracle is the evil one in their ping.
Yeah.
And then just keep it there for the rest of the game.
I did run this, I think it was this rip once, where when the hermit died, it was getting close to the end game. Evil was not doing as well as they're showing here. And I was just like, all right, do you know what I'm doing? Ed, I've heard you solving this game a bunch. You're going to be harpy bad at players you think are good for the rest of the game. Have fun with this.
Yeah. Which is perfect, because like then that player has to make a choice of like how many evil players do I think are alive? Is it worth it for me to come out as mad and suffer the consequences of dying? Like, what do I do? And yeah, it really, I think, makes things quite interesting. At this point, I think... And the other thing as well with Witch in particular, going back to the conversation we were having earlier about player agency, I would be going, who is the evil team trying to frame? Because I think I often run into this situation in the late game where I become conscious as a storyteller that like I know who the evil team needs to be framing in order to win the game, but I don't think the evil team agrees with my assessment of what's happening, which like is entirely fair and valid because they don't have all the information that I have, right? Like I know everything. I am the storyteller. I see the grim. They don't have that. And so they might have different reads. Sometimes I just see this where like an evil player decides like quite early, like I'm going to frame Joe. And then like everyone thinks Joe is good, but that evil player is still like really committed to framing Joe. Or like I had a game, in the Sydney games the other night. The demon was just like, I'm going to frame the evil twin as evil, and then everyone's going to think I'm good because I have the correct twin. But everyone thought the good twin was the evil one. And so he just looked like, what was he doing? I mean, they ended up winning, and it was a really fun game. But it was just like, he was trying to be like, I'm good. Everyone's going to think I'm good because I correctly know which one is evil. But no one thought that she was evil. They all thought she was good.
Oh, my God. And so it was just so him. Rare that the evil twin and wins just, the social battle.
Very rare.
It was amazing. Then
to have your demon sell you out anyway.
It was so, oh my, you guys would have loved it. It was Revenge of the Martian Vampires, and they killed the demon on five, I think. And so, or like six or five. And so it was like final five or four, and they had to kill into the twin pair to trigger the heretic. And they killed the evil twin, thinking that she was the good twin to trigger the heretic win. And the game ended because the demon was already dead, but it ended in an evil win because they had killed the evil twin. And it's just like incredible. But yeah, Perfect. It's... I think it's really one of the things that I'd be looking at in that situation in a game like this of like, okay, who is the evil team trying to frame, and who needs to be framed in order for evil to win? Because which makes that very tricky, right? Because if the evil team is really trying to frame the Oracle, and then I witch the Oracle because I'm like, the Oracle, everyone freaking trusts the Oracle. The Oracle's really confirmed by the Shigenja information because I pointed the Shigenja towards the poisoner. Like, that Oracle needs to die for evil to win. But if the Oracle dies and the Yagababble and the Scarlet Woman have just spent all day being like, the Oracle's evil, he's like super evil. Like, all of a sudden you end up in a situation where, like, as a storyteller, like, I'm trying to help, but I'm doing it at the expense of like what the evil team is trying to do, even if what I think is that the evil team is doing the wrong thing. And I think as a storyteller, like, it's my responsibility to respect the choices that the evil team is trying to make, even if I don't think that those choices are going to win in the game, because at the end of the day, like, it's their choices to make, even though I have more information. And like, every once in a while, I will go against this. I remember a game where I gave an empath like different information to what the poisoner wanted them to have, because everyone, like, I was like, if I think it had something to do with like sus being on the demon versus the minion. And basically I was like, I'm going to put this sus on the minion, even though the evil team is trying to clear the minion, because if the minion is good, then the demon is evil. And that's where the whole good team is at. So the good team needs to think the minion is evil so that the demon lives. But it's very rare that I will kind of go against what I think my players are trying to do, because it's the player's game to play. It's just my job to try and like facilitate what they want to do, in my opinion.
Really good advice, like really underrated good advice, like to think about, make sure you're aware of the state of play, you know, don't sink the evil team with their own abilities, but simultaneously let them make the choices, you just support what they're trying to do.
You normally want to do it with your player's agency once, as long as, even if it's not like from your perspective optimal, except for like the very rare situations where like sometimes this will come up in Trouble Brewing, where the demon will be like, I want to start past to that minion, and you're like, that minion's in an empath too, and an investigator pig. It has been seen by a raven keeper. Well, your other minion is squeaky clean. I don't think you care that much.
Yeah, like, exactly. I think that's such a big thing. Is like, how much is this player going to mind? Because I also, right, like, I'm sure you guys have experienced this as well, where you have one player who, like, they really want to be, like, responsible for the choices that they make and own them. And if I go against what that player is trying to do, they're going to be mad at me, even if what I did was better for their team and better for them. So I'm just going to let that happen. Whereas there are other players where I'm like, I know that we have that trust. Like, as a player and a storyteller, we have a relationship where the trust is there, and they know that like I have their best interests at hand, and so they might say to me, hey, this is what I want, but the implication that follows is like, there, if you think there's something better, I trust you to do the better thing, and if you don't do the thing I've asked you for, I am going to assume that you had a damn good reason why, and I'm going to put my trust in you having that reason, and then go and try and figure out, my next job is to figure out what that reason was so that I can be a better player for my team in this game.
I was about to say, right, it's not just, oh, I trust you and I trust that you've made the right decision. It's, okay, I'm not going to be mad about you making this decision. I'm going to go, okay, wait, why did she do that? Why did Jams do that instead of the thing I just said I wanted Jams to do? Oh, that minion is in a lot of trouble. Okay, well, let's not start past there. That seems good.
Yeah, you should have a really, really, really damn good reason if you're going to go against your player's agency, is I think the conclusion here.
Similarly, I think as a player, there's so much power in like doing that on the other side as well. Like, if I'm playing in a game, and I remember having this where I poisoned somebody, and at the time I was like, why the fuck did they make this choice? That choice was so, like, I was so annoyed by like whatever the choice was that had been made. I don't remember what exactly it was. It might have been like an Oracle number that was given differently, or an empath number or something. But it turned out what had happened was I had poisoned the snake charmer on the night that the snake charmer had snake charmed my demon. And so the snake charmer was like hard clearing the demon as being the demon because of that poison. And that was why they had given the empath like a different number. Like, they hadn't used my poison to impact a number. But it took me like days to figure that out. And I think as a player, like, I really was struggling with that, because I was like, but I poisoned the freaking empath who had a number on my, or like whatever it was. Like, what the hell? I don't understand why they've done this. Or, oh, that's what it was. It was, I had poisoned the Undertaker, and the Undertaker saw the Snake Charmer as the Snake Charmer. And I was like, no, everyone thinks Brad is evil. Why would you show him as the Snake Charmer? And they showed him as the Snake Charmer because he had freaking Snake Charmed the demon when he was poisoned the night before. But like, yep. I didn't know that. And so I was so annoyed about it. And it's like, no, you have to, like, yeah.
Sometimes you just don't find out until Grim Reveal, right?
To trust. Oh, yeah. And then it's great. And you're like, oh my God. But yeah, it's just that, like, trust, I think, is the most important part of storytelling beyond, like, really anything. Like, because that's what lets you run good games, and it's what lets your players exist in a place where they can do the things that they want to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, any sort of final thoughts on either storytelling The Hermit or The Hermit generally?
It's fun. Go play it. Pull the token.
It is fun. Yeah, it's so fun. I think it's just like, yeah, have fun with, I mean, have fun with it. That's so fucking vague and stupid. have fun with it. But it's such an interesting character. And I do think, like, it's less advice, but more of like a go out and try weird shit, really, is mm-hmm. what I want to impart.
We're
people
big
with
fans of go try shit. That's
great. I love that.
Hermit is certainly the character to try the stupid ideas you've had without and see if they work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, it's such a playground for all sorts of silly things. And it's, I also think genuinely, I like to storytell characters that challenge me to be better as a storyteller. And I think The Hermit is very much that, at least both from a mechanic standpoint and from a decision-making standpoint. I think The Hermit, it gives you so much space to be really intentional about what you're trying to do. So I really like The Hermit for that. And so I think if you are looking to improve your storytelling, like, put The Hermit on scripts that you run and run The Hermit and practice, like, making decisions when you're factoring in three outsiders instead of just one. And yeah, it's what a good outsider to practice with.
It's all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's all right. Of them.
Jams, thank you so much for coming on, talking to us about The Hermit and all kinds of other cool stuff. This is just a really fun conversation. We really appreciate you coming. We like to roll out the red carpet for our guests. So obviously, you know, you're a wonderful resource for everybody on Reddit and the unofficial and on the TPI stream. But where can folks find you? What are you up to? Let them know what you got going on.
What am I up to? To be honest, I've been on a bit of a, like, social media hiatus, and I have been hiding mostly in the Cow and Moon gelato parlor in Enmore, which is where Steve and I create the game. So you can find me there if you're in Sydney. No, I have social medias. You can find me on Instagram at Jamie Mercado, at on what else? Like Blue Sky, I think, and Twitter at Boom Jamsy. Sometimes I haven't really been doing the streaming thing much, but lots of my friends they all take turns streaming on Gen Clonk on Twitch and YouTube, which is good fun. Lots of silly fun games there, and yeah, mostly quite frankly, you can find me hidden in the depths of the gelato parlor trying to talk Steve out of decisions like The Hermit removing itself. That's where we're at. No, in all seriousness, yeah, just I would say, rather than like shilling myself, just, you know, support the company. You know, you can pick up some cool merch and things.
Yeah.
Just play the game. That's how you support me. You play the game and you have fun. bloodontheclocktower.com. Yeah.
My Clock Tower water bottle is in the other room, but it's really a good water bottle.
I should have had all my merch over here. I didn't think about it. I'll make sure I've got it all here to show for you.
It's all good. I'm like, I said I was going to change out of my pajamas before this, and I just put on a normal shirt. Could have put on a Clock Tower. No, I don't. We're getting there.
We'll get there.
I think there's some stickers on my water bottle. It's fine.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoy this deep look at The Hermit. Until next time.
May your scenarios stay grim.